Next to your home, your vehicle is where you'll spend a good amount of your life. So make the ride exhilarating. Introducing the all-new, fully reimagined Infiniti QX60, a luxury SUV designed to help you conquer life in style. The all-new QX60 features ample cargo space, available massaging front seats, and a panoramic moonroof. It's as functional as it is stylish and as versatile as it is serene. Visit InfinityUSA.com to check out the all-new, fully reimagined Infiniti QX60. Now with extremely limited availability, contact your local retailer for inventory information.
This is Hans Scheil from the Finishing Well podcast. On Finishing Well, we help you make godly choices about Medicare, long-term care, and your money. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just seconds. Enjoy it, share it, but most of all, thank you for listening and choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
Coming to you from an entrenched barricade deep in the heart of Central North Carolina. Masculine Journey After Hours, a time to go deeper and be more transparent on the topic covered on this week's broadcast. So sit back and join us on this adventure. The Masculine Journey After Hours starts here now.
Welcome to Masculine Journey After Hours, and we are in the middle of our, what we called our pillar series.
Now it's a palette series.
Now it's a palette series. We called it tools, and then we called it toolbox.
Yeah, and now nobody understands what palette is.
So yeah, exactly. So clarify. So are we talking like, okay, you have pillars, these nice columns, and now are we talking like the pillars you get from like the home improvement store and stack up? Those pallets?
No.
Okay. Good. No. Just clarification.
What other kind of palette do we have, Harold?
The roof of Satan's mouth.
But that's not it either.
That's not it. No. What's left, Sam? You're the painter.
Ish. Right. We started talking, and Robbie, I think, coined the term.
He did.
Satan's palette. Because we're talking about, he uses all these things that we're calling pillars, these tools that he uses against us in conjunction with one another. It's like making a painting in our life. You know, he dabbles in a little bit of pride, and then he throws some shame right behind it, and then he's going to, you know, throw this other one in over here, an unforgiveness, you know, to top it off. And so he's got all these things that he throws in constantly in our life, kind of like a, I don't even know what you would call it, but just a opaque
kind shading.
Of our life.
There's a truth, but then there's a shade that's just close to it, but not quite the truth.
Yes.
And it's just off from that true blue. It's just a little off blue, a little greenish in there. And it's like just enough to get you going down the wrong path.
Oh, it'd be green if we had envy. That's one we haven't covered yet.
So we need to put that one in.
But we're trying to bring light to expose it.
We are. So this week we are talking about, Andy, what are we talking about this week?
Pride.
Pride
or ego?
Or ego.
Right. Kind of work hand in hand.
They do kind of work hand in hand.
Let go of my ego.
First sin.
Was it pride or ego or both?
Well, it says pride, but
it was both.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to have one without the other.
Yep.
They kind of walk hand in hand, as you
said. Yeah, I guess whenever you're wanting people to worship you because you're so beautiful, that's probably more an ego. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no clue.
Let me get out the dictionary. Jim, come on, Jim.
I have a mirror.
Hit us with the definitions.
I have a mirror at home. I know that's not the case. So, David, let's go ahead and go with your clip. Let's talk about that.
All right. So, it comes from Back to Future number 3. I hope everybody has seen that blockbuster film. Marty McFly travels back to the future in the Wild Wild West and is basically trying to defend Doc Brown's honor, and ultimately through every series of this movie he gets called some sort of coward, and lets pride stand in his way on it. So we'll listen to the clip and then we'll talk about it.
There'd been something that happened with some pie plates or pie tins.
Oh yeah, he instead of pulling a gun out and shooting the guy that had a gun, he threw an empty pie pan, and I think that kind of shows a little bit more of where he thinks he's better than everybody else on that. He thinks I could just hit you with a pie tin. Bullets don't matter.
Here we go.
You.
Hey, lighten up, jerk.
Mighty strong words, runt. You man enough to back him up with more than just a pie plate?
Look, just leave my friends alone.
Oh, what's wrong, dude? You yellow. That's what I thought. Yellow belly.
Nobody calls me yellow.
Let's finish it right now.
Not now, Buford. Marshall's got our guns.
Like I said, we'll finish this tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're robbing the Pine City stage.
What about Monday? We doing anything Monday?
No, Monday be fine. You can kill him on Monday.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Noon. I do my killing before breakfast. 7 o'clock.
8 o'clock. I do my killing after breakfast.
Marty.
You know, I think, you know, he shows his pride there in several instances where he always has to be that one-upper, always has to have a response to everything that Biff is throwing back at him. And I think, you know, as men going through our life, you know, that's where the enemy gets us on that. You know, we potentially leave a door open, our back door open, and it ends up being where the enemy can attach onto that pride, whatever it is. That we see in our life and just really just take it home on us.
Well, thank you. It's did he call him Buford in that?
So he did.
Is it not Biff in the third one?
Biff Buford Tannen.
Oh, okay. So he goes.
And Marty was Clint Eastwood. I'm pretty sure that's what he said his name was in that.
Yeah, they had to get his permission.
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood's permission to use it. I just saw a TikTok on that embarrassingly the other day. Yeah. So I did. There is something in us as men, and the enemy knows that if he calls us the right name, if he can get somebody to call us the right name, we'll respond. Mm-hmm. Right? For Marty McFly, mm-hmm. we want to look back and say whenever somebody called him chicken or yellow, you know, he rose up. Mm-hmm. But I would say that there's probably a buzz term that will activate pretty much most men if you can just get that button pushed.
Mm-hmm. Usually tied to something from the past.
Tied to pain from the past?
Oh, mine was, you know, I was a car salesman. And if mm-hmm. so, and it was, well, I was worse than Marty McFly. I really was. If somebody called me crook, mm-hmm. you're a crook. Oh, baby. It was on.
Oh, yeah.
We
know Robin's trigger word.
It was. You know, it was amazing. I can remember many a time I had this pencil, this great big pencil, you know. People always say, get your pencil sharp. So I had this giant pencil, man. And this couple, I can remember them at Crown Dodge one night about 11:30. We're trying to close this deal. And this man looks at me and he goes, you're nothing but a crook. I picked up the pencil. And I'm like, this crook is fixing to have your head, buddy. I'm telling you, that's what I'm sitting here working, trying to help you. And you're, oh, man. Oh, it was very embarrassing. I felt worse than Marty McFly on more than one occasion. All you had to do was call me a crook.
Yeah, for me, it's if somebody calls me a liar, and attacks my integrity, that'll push me over the edge pretty much quicker than almost anything. Mm. You know, have I lied in my life? Absolutely, I have. But I try not to, you know. And so I really try hard not to do that. Mm. I'd be very intentional about not doing that. And so I think when somebody calls you something that you try hard not to be, as you talked about, crook, right, you're doing everything you can to be on the forefront, up front with them, mm. right? And they still do it that way. Jim?
Well, as a liar and a crook, those don't bother me as much.
Hey.
My rough one was arrogance.
Jim, we're not at confession now, right?
Yeah.
Arrogance gets me if somebody says I'm arrogant, because I try not to be. But and maybe I should give this to you guys too, but when I heard it, I realized I was, and the truth hurts. So maybe those are the ones that hurt us most, or the ones that we recognize in ourselves.
Robbie, I think he's calling us a liar and a crook. This show may end quickly.
We've never had a full mutiny, have we?
I got my pencil out in the garage. Yeah.
Sharpen it up. We're going to get it. Yeah. So, Andy, let's go ahead and talk about your – oh, Harold, you had a point? Go ahead, Harold.
You guys keep talking about things you can do something about. How about getting called shorty?
You learn to live with it, Harold.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I've got a bump for next week for you, Harold.
Short
people.
No reason. Randy Newman, great singer.
And I might have a bump for you, too.
Touche. Well said.
I'm on the opposite end of that spectrum from Harold. And I had a guy that was quite tall tell me one time that he's so tired at hearing people say, "How's the weather up there?" He started spitting on them and say it was raining.
That's right. That's it. That'll work. That.
So, Andy, you want to tell us a little bit about your clip?
So this clip is from Remember the Titans. The teams have come together. The black and white schools were merging, and they were getting ready to go to camp. And coach is going around meeting everybody, meeting the new players. And there's really a lot of pride. You can probably count out four or five occurrences of pride because, you know, this is football. You know, everybody takes it serious. And you've got these guys that are all Americans trying to tell the coach what to do, and this is kind of the result.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, coaches. How are you?
Good morning to you.
How are you? Looks good today, doesn't it? Just wanted to let you know what the offense is doing.
An awful skinny playbook, ain't it?
Yeah, well, I run six plays, split beers, like Novocaine. Just give it time, always works. See you on the bus.
Be patient, Bill. Your time will come.
Well, here we go.
Here we go. I'm going to help you boys.
I'm Gary Bertier, the only All-American you got on this team. You want any of us to play for you, you reserve half the open positions for Hammond players. Half the offense, half the special teams. We don't need any of your people on defense. We're already set.
Uh-huh. Don't need none of my people.
Mm-hmm.
What you say name was, Jerry?
Gary.
No, you must have said Jerry, like Lewis, which would make you Dean Martin, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, got an announcement to make. We got Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin going to camp with us here this year. Jerry tells the jokes, Dean sings the songs, and gets the girl. Let's give him a round of applause.
Where's your folks, Gary? Parents, are they here? Where are they?
That's my mother.
That's your mama?
Mm-hmm.
Very nice, I want you. Take a good look at her. Because once you get on that bus, you ain't got no mama no more. You got your brothers on the team, and you got your daddy. Now, you know who your daddy is, don't you? Gary, if you want to play on this football team, you answer me when I ask you, who is your daddy? Who's your daddy, Gary? Who's your daddy?
You.
Uh-huh. And whose team is this? Is this your team? Or is this your daddy's team?
Yours.
Mm-hmm. Get on the bus. Put your jacket on first. Dean? Fix that tie, son.
So there's a lot of humor in there, but there's a lot of truth in it. And, you know, you just think about it. So what would have been the fruit of that if they would have just let that pride fester and, you know, the All-American told the coach what to do and nobody really humbled themselves and they continued on? What would you have had? Would you have had discord, no football season, successful football season, no reconciliation of races?
No one would have remembered the Titans.
No, exactly. It would have been forget the Titans. You know, it's like
basically describing the NBA.
No comment there. But you know, when you see that humility that has to take place, and you see it all. That's it's really just a continuation of humility. But there's a lot of pride all throughout the movie. I mean, talking about Sunshine, the guy that comes and the star quarterback, and he has to be humble, but he ends up leading the team. It's just all over that movie. But, you know, I mean, just thinking about my life, okay, I was I felt like I was really good at my career, and I was trying to work my way up the company ladder, get some success, you know, make a name for myself. And I just kept, you know, running into people who, you know, that disagreed with me, upset me. I always wanted to be right. And my career just hit a wall. And, you know, it's kind of like to Bob's point earlier, it's like I felt like God was really leading me into taking the lowest seat of the table. I had a lot of pride that I needed to be humbled. And, you know, I really believe the fruit of the masculine journey is that you find men who thought they were making something of themselves and getting some success, and God had to take them back to first grade, kindergarten, to start over and to really allow him to build them up in through humility to where we're actually living out what he intended for us to.
Thank you, Andy. Robbie?
I just liked it because when you think about that, who's your daddy?
Exactly.
And whose team, you know, whose right. team is it that you're
I'm
playing?
I'm not the All-American. I can guarantee you that.
The
Well, talk about Satan's.
Go ahead, Bob.
Satan's palate. So he mixes shame in with, you know, this pride and ego. I mean, just like we were talking about from last week. Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of shame and from my work. I felt like I wasn't doing a good job, and I felt like God was kind of pushing me into it. And like that, the point wasn't shame that I was just way too overworked. And his point was, you know, I finally got to the point of swallowing that pill, like they just had to do in that clip, and just okay, and then just realizing, okay, this is my pride here, and I can't fix this at this current job. I need to move on. So Satan was kind of like trying to drill me in with shame and in with the pride, and then I finally was like, hey, no, God, I'm listening to you. I'm gonna, you know, swallow my pride and look for a new job.
Good word.
Yeah, there's a lot of marginalization there where he just tries to get you off by yourself and be alone again.
Yeah. Thinking back on the movie, Andy, Remember the Titans, the whole movie is about breaking pride.
Yeah, it really is.
Right, on all sides of the equation. Mm-hmm. Right, you had it when the linebackers are, you know, going at each other.
Yep.
Right, about, and it was pride driven for yep. both of them. You have Boone, the head coach, and then I can't remember the
Yost.
Other.
Yost, yeah, and he was trying to win the award for best coach or, you know, history. I don't forget
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, yeah, for Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, and both of them had to battle through their pride,
right,
and to set it aside and humble themselves. And that was what was the good thing about that movie. A, it's based on a true story,
right?
But B, without everybody humbling their pride, there's no unity,
right?
Right. You can't have one person that hangs out in the pride thing and have unity very often. Yeah. I can't think of when that really works.
Yeah, hard to get a bunch of we in all of eyes.
Yeah, when it's all about me, there's no we there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, Rodney, you have a clip as well.
I do, and I'm going to get to use it.
You do get to use it. And this is one I wanted to save it for last for a reason, and I'll tell you about that when we're done.
All right. Well, this is from The Chosen, and this is the scene where Jesus comes in and heals the paralytic. This is Matthew 9, and in this, you basically have the Pharisee thinks what Jesus is doing is blasphemy, and is calling out the Son of God of all people and saying, who are you? And you could have learned from no Pharisee down in Nazareth and all this kind of stuff, and basically just trying to put a bunch of shame on the Son of God. Could you imagine a more prideful thing? But that's what's going on in this scene. You just kind of listen and let it kind of play out, and we'll talk.
Jesus of Nazareth! I saw what you did to the leper on the road this morning. My friend has been paralyzed since childhood. He has no hope but you. Please, do for him what you did for the leper.
That's a rope!
Put it back, man!
If you are willing, Rabbi, I know you can do this.
You! By whose authority do you teach? Answer me.
If you are willing, Rabbi, you know you can.
Hey, I'm talking to you. By whom do you teach? Certainly not the authority of any rabbi from Nazareth. Where did you study?
Your faith is beautiful. Son, take heart. Your sins are forgiven. Who is this who speaks blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God alone? Right. But I ask you, which is easier to say? Your sins are forgiven, or rise up and walk? It's easy to say anything, no? But to show you, and so that you may know that the Son of Man has the authority on earth to forgive sins, I say to you, my son, rise, Make up your bed and go home.
And then as you go on in Matthew, you get into Matthew 11. So there you have a single Pharisee that has a lot of pride. And then you get to Matthew 11. I love it where he's kind of comparing the cities. Basically, Chorazin and Bethsaida, woe to you, for they're like Tyre and Sidon. And basically saying, if Tyre and Sidon would have been shown what you were shown, they would have repented. And does the same thing with Capernaum to Sodom and said, Sodom would remain to this day if they knew what you knew and saw what you saw and had all the signs and wonders and miracles that Jesus brought to them in the message. It's just very deep. And where it kind of, for me, it kind of culminates then to the point of, well, how far can pride take you? So they go to the synagogue in Matthew 12, and you've got the guy with the hand that needs to be healed, and they want to trap him, right? Like, who can you heal on the Sabbath? And, of course, Jesus then explains it's good to do good on the Sabbath because who wouldn't go get his sheep out of the ditch? And basically, it gets to the point where they end up then at the end there, that little in 12:14, but the Pharisees went out and conspired against him and to how they might destroy him. So it takes them all the way to murder. Murdering a guy that all he's doing is good, explaining to them that it's good to do good any day of the week, and they want to kill him for it? That's how far pride can really run us down, like it did with Satan.
Thank you. The reason I did want to play that clip last was it makes a point that, you know, Jesus is trying to live out his calling, and the thing that he runs up against that ultimately tries to take him out is pride, where people can't handle what he's doing. And should we expect that our experience will be anything other than that? Mm. When we try to live out our calling, that we're going to run up against people that have pride, that, you know, make fun of our show because we use movie clips or whatever that might be, you know, that it's not the format they would like. I don't know who does or doesn't. I don't really care because I feel like we're doing the things God's called us to do.
Yeah.
Right? But you're going to run up against that, and you should expect it when you're trying to live out your life in that calling. Right? If you're walking with him, that it's going to be opposed.
Yeah.
Right? And so at the other thing I was interesting, there were leopards back in Nazareth, apparently. I know it's leper, but I swear
we're
she says...
We're just PETA-friendly here.
Yeah, I think she does say leopard twice in there. So. Just saying. So I'll share a story about pride. I was, at this point, maybe 25. Had a brand new baby at home. You know, she was... year and a half, 2 years old, something like that. And I got a new boss at work. And it was somebody that had been promoted out of a different area into this area. She'd kind of come from like purchasing and then was over me and stuff and the people in the field. And she just had a lot of questions. And it was at a time that I was really incredibly stressed. You know, they had me spread way too thin. This was back in California. And I remember she would just call me and ask me questions, and I'd have to explain and all that. And I didn't mean this in any way, shape, or form as a sexist comment, but I just said, why don't you let the field people do what the field people do, and you do what the office people do, and we'll all get our job done, right? And a week later, I was out of work. It was that quickly because she heard it completely different than what I intended it. For one, I would never make that statement, but it also taught me a lesson about being very slow to speak. You know, and I know you guys have a hard time believing that, but no, slow to speak, especially in certain situations, and to evaluate things a lot differently and to be very intentional with communication. Because it hit right at the time that California was going into a recession. And so I didn't find another job in the construction industry for about 6 months. You know, and I was mowing yards and installing sprinkler systems and doing whatever I could to keep my family fed.
That was a humbling part of the story, right?
Yeah, it was very humbling. And I had lots of time as I was cutting yards to think about what I had said and how not to do it again. But it was a prideful response to her. Mm. You know, it was came from a place of frustration, but it was like, I have better things to do than to do this. Mm. You know, at the end of the day, she was my boss. Right, and I learned very quickly that was not the way to handle things.
Yeah, I had a similar thing. So when I was young in my career, I was much more humble. I was just doing my stuff at my level. I was getting promoted on a good regular basis there. And then I found out about, what was this, maybe 5 years in, there was a manager's position that came open. I was like, man, I'd kind of like to apply, but I'm like, I really didn't think, honestly, I was ready to be a manager. And if I would have actually applied, went in and said that, I probably would have been the manager, because I'd been looking, and I had everybody afterwards, you know, that were like above me. Well, why didn't you apply for that? Well, I didn't think I was ready. Well, most people thought you were going to get it. I'm like, where is this coming from? You know, next thing you know, I'm in a situation where I can be a leader in things, and I am the leader. And next thing, I'm very prideful about that, thinking, oh, I can do much more than what I thought. Because back then I could do, you know, people thought I could do more. So now I took it the wrong way, and I'm on the other side of it. And I made comments to my boss that I shouldn't have made. And next thing you know, I think that was a big part of me being bounced out of my job at that time. So yeah, you can swing many different ways into how you want to use those situations to grow you or to kill you. And that's where I think God stepped in. It's like a couple of different times, like, no, no, no. And I really find myself much easier now to stop and go, okay, why are you going to go into this conversation with? What are you going into the meeting with? What are you going to, you know, what are you trying to achieve by even trying to do anything at work and trying to build something? And it's like, I really have to check myself.
Mm-hmm. Seems like that happens to a lot of us. There was a time in my life when I thought I was the real hot shot in the programming world. I even got in and modified IBM's operating system on the computer so that I could take it over. I created my own pre-compilers so that I didn't have to generate a lot of coding that was housekeeping cuts kind of stuff. And I'll have to admit that I became very prideful about that. And so a situation arose in the company where my boss had issues and had to go out on retirement. And when he did, his boss took a guy that I had hired out of college and trained and made him my boss. And that was what led to me coming to North Carolina, which was a great thing, as it turns out. But my pride, I think, led to my downfall.
Yeah, pride comes before a fall. I think that's kind of a scripture right there. Right? And we've all lived it. We've all felt
actually
it.
Actually, before destruction, a haughty spirit comes before a fall.
Hey, Bob, real quick, where can they get information about your web, about your upcoming boot camps?
That's centralohiobootcamp.com.
And go to masculinejourney.org for our boot camp and entrenchment coming up this fall. Talk to you next week.
This is the Truth Network.